Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming this afternoon. We'd like to read from Bhagavad Gita, last chapter and last verse. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Parto Danudara Tatra Sri Vijayobhuti Dhruvaniti Mati Mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power and morality. That is my opinion. The Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory on his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. So, this last verse finishes all the instructions that Krishna gave to Arjuna many thousands of years ago. And this was on a battlefield. A great war was impending. But one should not conclude that the essence and instruction of Bhagavad Gita is about war, about battles, about fighting. Manmana Baba Madbhakto Madhyadi Mam Namaskuru Mam Vivaisati Satyamte Patijane Priyasime. It is about becoming a devotee, developing love of God, advancing on the spiritual path. This is the actual essence of Bhagavad Gita. It just so happened that this conversation took place on a battlefield, which is very wondrous in itself, that such a transcendental subject could be even spoken about in what was to be a great fight for survival and so on. But we find that where Krishna is, he is always on the transcendental position, and Arjuna represents the devotee of Krishna. So here Krishna is referred to as Yogeshwara, the master of yoga, the master of mysticism. From Krishna comes all the spirituality, all the transcendental knowledge, all love, all these things. And this conversation happened to be in that place at Kurukshetra, but it was a question for Arjuna about the Varnashram Dhamma. For those who aren't familiar with Varnashram Dhamma, it's about a duty in life. We are in this world, we have our duties in life. But ultimately, one is supposed to come to the transcendental spiritual position. Arjuna was a warrior. And there was a battle. It was not the doing of Arjuna, not the doing of Yudhisthira Maharaj, but the opposing side was hell-bent on fighting and war. And in order to protect righteousness, Arjuna had to do his duty as a warrior. So everyone has to do their duty in the world, just like in society. There is need of doctors, there is need of nurses, there is need of electricians, there is need of plumbers, there is need of farmers. Everyone has their work, they have to live. And so there's also need of police. There is need of police, there is need of soldiers, because unfortunately, the world situation is that although we would maybe like to become spiritual and live a peaceful life, but still there are others who are not very inclined to that and cause disturbance. So for protection and for these things, there is need of police and soldiers and so on. Maybe you can take that. You can take and play outside. So it's a question of duty. So this is the an external understanding of the situation. But internally, we understand the more spiritual essence, the master of mystics. This is Krishna. And Arjuna being the devotee. Now, of course, as I said, he was a warrior. And Arjuna is a very famous warrior. In fact, when he was on the battlefield, Hanuman was also on his side. Hanuman was on the flag of, you know, there's a story of Hanuman. Why he was happened to be on the flag of Arjuna. Anyone know, you know that story? Hanuman is the great devotee of Lord Ram. But Hanuman became the companion of Arjuna, being on his flag. And previously, Arjuna had travelled to Rameshwaram in South India, the place where Lord Ram had built a bridge to go over to the Lanka. So Arjuna had gone there, and he was talking with others, and he was saying, why Lord Ram made a bridge of the stone to go over to Lanka? Why didn't he make the bridge out of the arrows? I could make the bridge out of the arrows. That would be a very strong bridge. And one monkey was there, and he said, no, no, the bridge would be too weak from arrows. And Arjuna said, no, I could make a very strong bridge from the arrows. And the monkey said, all right, you make the bridge, but you'll see it'll be too weak. So Arjuna, with his arrows and mantra, he made a bridge. But then the monkey got big and jumped on it and broke it. Then he said that, Arjuna said that, well, if I'll make another bridge so strong, if I can't make it so strong, then I will commit suicide. And if you cannot break it this time, you have to be my servant. So again he made the bridge out of the arrows. And again the monkey jumped and broke it. So Arjuna said, oh, well, now I have to commit to suicide because that was my vow. I didn't make the bridge strong enough. So he was just about to commit suicide. But then all of a sudden, one brahmana came there and he said, no, no, I don't think that Arjuna should be forced to do that. Let him make another bridge. Just one more time. They made another bridge out of the arrows. And the monkey jumped again. This time he couldn't break it. So then the brahmana said, oh, well, this time you couldn't break that. You have to be the servant of Arjuna. So the monkey, he revealed himself. He was none other than Hanuman. How is it I couldn't break the bridge? You must be Lord Ram. The brahmana, he revealed himself. He was Lord Ram. So he was the one. He was the arbiter in the dispute. So then Arjuna said, yes, well, you'll be my servant. You just, wherever my flag is, you can be there on my flag. So the emblem of a Hanuman is always on the flag of Arjuna. So he always, in that way, this means that he always has the protection of Hanuman. As well, he is a great warrior. Arjuna was such a great warrior that he was the best archer of his time. Archery. You know, he had the teacher, Dronacharya. That Dronacharya, he taught all the Pandavas. He taught all the Kurus. And he taught the Pandavas how to do the archery. And one time he wanted to make a test for the young students. So he made one wooden bird. And he put the wooden bird in the high in a tree. And then he called all the Pandavas one after the other. He said, Yudhisthira, come. Take the bow, take the arrow. There is the bird in the tree. What do you see? You see the bird? Yes. You see the tree? Yes. You see all around us, everyone? Yes. No good, go away. Bhimsen, come. Take the bow, take the arrow. You see the tree, you see the bird? Yes. No good, go away. Now Arjuna, come. Take the bow, take the arrow. Aim. Do you see us? No. Do you see the tree? No. Do you see the branches? No. Do you see the bird? No. And what do you see? I only see the eye of the bird. So, no, you are the archer. Fire your arrow. Straight in the eye. Arjuna was such a great warrior. So we have to be like that as far as devotee. Srila Prabhupada, our guru, used to explain like, just like Arjuna was such a great archer, he didn't see other. So a devotee, he just sees Krishna, he just sees devotional service, he sees these things, he's not distracted by other things. So we have to be like Arjuna was with the archery, firing the arrow. So Arjuna, Dhanudhara means that one whose bow can never be broken. This is Arjuna. So he was a great warrior. And it was his duty to take up the battle. The opposing elements were there. But he did so following the instruction of Krishna. So here it is said by Sanjaya that wherever there's Krishna, he is the master, he is Jogeshwara. He's like the guru and the disciple. The guru is the master, the disciple follows. Then the disciple becomes a very good disciple, he can also become master. This is the tradition. The cyclic sampradaya, the cyclic succession of parampara. The master, he has learned. And why is the master the master? Because before he was the student. And he was the very good student. And because he was very, then he became master. And then he got students. And they followed. And then they became master like that. Original master is Krishna. And then he teaches. So Arjuna is the student of Krishna. And Krishna is the guru. Krishna said to Arjuna that I will have spoken many things about the karma and about the yoga and about all the kala, so many different things. And have you heard all this attentively? If you like, I can re-explain any point or all the points. All the points. As the guru, he was prepared. The guru has to be prepared to explain just according to the student's capability to understand. If someone is a teacher, he has to differentiate. One student learns more quickly, one not so. So he has to adjust. The teacher just teaches the same for all the students, not taking into account the different level of the student, then he is not so good teacher. So Arjuna and Krishna being the guru, he was ready to explain any point. And then Arjuna said, yes, now you have explained by your mercy, by your explanation, my ignorance is gone, I have the knowledge again, my memory is restored, I'm free from the illusion. This is the actual essence of Bhagavad Gita. So, wherever there is this Krishna, the master, Arjuna, the servant, the guru, that is, or the supreme and the devotee, there will always be opulence, here it is said. There will certainly be opulence. Now, there are different types of opulence. You have the opulence of the world. And then you have the spiritual opulence. Spiritual opulence means being situated in the transcendental knowledge, in the divine love. This is the spiritual opulence. Opulence of the world can mean wealth, can mean renunciation, can be fame, can be all these things in the world. Generally people want this type of opulence. They want a lot of money, they want a lot of fame, they want power, they want beauty of the world. All these things are like opulences of the world. So generally people want that type of opulence. So when one becomes devotee, that may or may not be there. That certainly Krishna gives a nice life for his devotee. But it's not that a devotee hankers after that type of opulence. He is not so attached to that type of opulence. Because these things are temporary. Sometimes you get the wealth, sometimes you don't have anything. You have your beauty. Generally the beauty is there in the youth, but then when the older age comes, the beauty is gone. But everyone running after the beauty. But the beauty in the world is temporary. Just like I read one article recently that in England, there was this new cream that even the scientists said, oh, this cream is very good for anti-aging because it brings out the ingredients that need to make the skin elastic. So there was a new cream. So some stores had this cream, and they had supply for 2 months. And the ladies, many ladies heard about this cream, and the stock ran out in 2 days. And as the last bottles were being sold, they were fighting in the aisles to get that last bottle. With the hope of restoring the beauty. But the beauty is temporary. But the beauty of the spiritual world, the spiritual life, and the opulence, and all the opulence of the spiritual world is another level of opulence. So certainly whether it is Krishna, whether it is devotees, there will be all levels of opulence. Spiritual, material opulence. There will also be a victory. Victory can be relative. You are victorious over your opponent in the sport, or in the class, or in the debate, something like that. Victorious in that way. You are successful and victorious in your work. But victory on a higher level means that you are victorious over the struggle for existence in the material world. That is real victory. That victory is not so easy, especially for the materialist. But if someone can be victorious over the struggle of birth and death in this world, then that is true victory. So where there is Krishna who is giving the transcendental the instruction, and someone who is following like Arjuna, there will certainly be that victory. So certainly these things will be there. Opulence, victory, extraordinary power. Just like Hanuman. Hanuman disguised himself as a small monkey. He broke the arrow bridge of Arjuna. Twice he broke. But when Lord Ram came disguised as Brahmana, Arjuna made again the arrow bridge. And Hanuman, with so much, he couldn't break it. So where there is God, there is all power. Tejas. Actually, the supreme power is the supreme personality of God in Krishna. So if Krishna wants to give you so much power, who can stop you? If Krishna wants to take away all your power, then what can you do? Krishna wants to give you, just like there's one saying, if with your two hands, if Krishna wants to give you so much wealth, how your two hands can hold? And if Krishna wants to take away, how your two hands can hold it also? That power, everything, that comes from Krishna. Extraordinary power. Not ordinary power, but extraordinary. So certainly, you know, Arjuna was a great warrior, but he had to fight a great battle with thousands and thousands and millions of soldiers. How he was able to be successful, that is by the mercy of Krishna. Therefore, Sanjaya said, oh, there is Krishna. You know, there was one story where both Arjuna and Duryodhana went to see Krishna and Dwarka before Kurukshetra, before the battle. And they wanted to seek Krishna's help. Battle was coming. So Duryodhana arrived first. And the servant of Krishna, now Krishna is just resting. You can go there, but just wait there until he wakes. So Duryodhana sat by the head of Krishna and was waiting. Then Arjuna came. And the servant said the same. He is resting. So Arjuna went and he sat at the feet of Krishna. So Krishna awoke. He saw Arjuna first, then he saw Duryodhana. Yes, how can I help you? You have come a long way. And Duryodhana said, I was here first. You have to ask me first. So Krishna said, yes, that may be. But when I awoke, I saw Arjuna first. So I'll have to ask him first. But one thing, if you will both come to ask my assistance in the fighting, I will not fight. I am not fighting. But my army can fight. So you can pick me, or you can take my army. So I'll ask Arjuna first. Arjuna, so he is a great devotee. He said, Krishna, if you're just with me, I am happy. So Duryodhana, he was very happy. He was thinking, what a fool that is. Krishna's not even going to fight. So I'll take the army. He was very happy. And of course Arjuna was very happy. So both went happy. Duryodhana, when he went later to Hastinapur, he told his uncle, Shakuni, Arjuna's such a fool. He had the choice. army of Krishna or Krishna? Krishna said he doesn't fight. What a fool, he picked Krishna. I got the army. But Shakuni was me. Oh, you are foolish. You should have got Krishna and the army. Because Krishna's influence, even he is very powerful. So Shakuni was a little bit more intelligent. But this is the story of how the army was on Duryodhana. So Arjuna had to fight. But because Krishna was there, all power was there. He was able to fight and establish. Now here also it is said morality, righteousness. Right? Wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there will certainly be all these things and righteousness or morality. So there's ordinary morality, relative morality. What is that? It differs from person to person, country to country. What is moral here is not moral in the other country. Isn't it? Person to person, what is your moral standard? What is his moral? What is her moral standard? It's different. So ordinary morality. But the higher level of morality is that you are true to yourself as spirit soul. You engage in the devotional service. You come to the transcendental platform. That is the true position of the righteousness. That is above the ordinary morality of the world. So this is the perfection of morality. And this is actually the standard of morality. So certainly that morality will be there. But also, even as far as ordinary morality, Krishna wanted to establish the reign of Yudhisthira. He was righteous. Duryodhana, he was unrighteous. He was very jealous and would do anything. Would do anything to keep his power. Tried to kill the Pandavas, tried to kill Bhimsen, tried to kill all the Pandavas in the house of Lakshmi, you know that story. He invited them. Oh, you are very tired. You go on a holiday. I've got one nice house for you in the country. You go there. But we know the material was made of very flammable material, like the lacquer. And his trick was to let them go there, and then I will send someone to burn it. And they will all know. So many times he tried to kill Bhimsen by the poison. But so he was willing to do anything. He was willing to do anything to keep his position. So he was an unrighteous king. So Krishna is always on the side of everything proper, everything righteous, for the peacefulness of society. That's why he wanted the Yudhisthira. So this is the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. We have to understand if we understand the more esoteric meaning, wherever there is Krishna. So in this age, how is there Krishna? Remember one time our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada, he gave lecture in the Melbourne Town Hall, and someone said, Swami, it is said in Bhagavad Gita that again and again God comes every age. How is he coming in the Kali Yuga? And Prabhupada said he's coming in the form of his name. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Puna Sudha Niti Bhukto Binatman Naminamino. The name of Krishna, God can appear anyway. In the sight, in the hearing, in the sound, in the smell. God is everywhere. And he can manifest in anyone. So now in this age, in the name Krishna. Iti sodashakam nam nam kali kalmasanasanam nata paratayopaya sabberi shudrishyate. Lord Brahma told Narad Muni, when Narad Muni, the people of Kali Yuga, they will be very materialistic, how they will get their liberation. I don't see any means. And Lord Brahma, he said, oh yes, there is one mantra very powerful. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the Vedas, you won't find anything so sublime and all-encompassing as this mantra. So if the people in the age of Kali chant this mantra, Maha mantra, a very great, powerful mantra, then they will very easily attain success and perfection. So just chanting, he has appeared in the form of his name. And if you do this and read Bhagavad Gita, this book, there's one story of King Indra. You know King Indra. He is the god of the heavens. One time he was sitting on his throne. Many were praising him. Many devas were there. Gandharvas were singing, apsaras dancing. Then one new person came in the assembly. He was being fanned. He was accompanied by so many others. He came closer and closer. All of a sudden, Indra, who was sitting on his big throne, fell down just by force. If someone came and pushed him, he fell down on the ground and his crown went falling from his head. And then the devas who were there picked up that crown, brought that new person, sat him on Indra's throne and put the crown on him. Started doing arti, worshipping him. Indra was shocked. What's this? What's going on? Who is this person? Now the devas, all my assistants, they are worshipping him. He was shocked. He was speechless. He couldn't say anything. Who is it? He didn't do any ashvamedha yajna or any tapasya. I don't know. No one even knows who he is. Yet they have put him on the throne, my throne. He was very depressed. And he went to Lord Vishnu and he prayed to Lord Vishnu. How is this person? He didn't do any of these things, charitable acts or yajnas or anything. Lord Vishnu said, oh yes, he is a very special person. He is very powerful. He is very advanced spiritually. He has got the results of all yajnas and all charities, although he didn't do, simply because he read Bhagavad Gita 18th chapter 5 shlokas every day for all his life. And he has got this path. So Indra was shocked. Oh. He resolved right then and there, I will also learn this Bhagavad Gita. So he disguised himself as a Brahmana and he went to the earth. He went to the Godavari. And he was looking for some Brahmanas. Many were there, hermitages were there. Then he found one, very pure Brahmana. He was every day reciting Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. May I be your student? I want to learn this 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So he learnt and he learnt and he became very blissful and he attained high knowledge, transcendental. He became a very spiritual person. He no longer wanted to be the king of heaven. He realized, oh, this is very temporary compared to the bliss of the transcendental knowledge. What I want from these things. Previously, I thought that it was everything. One time before, Lord Indra became cursed to be a hog. You know that story? By Brihaspati, his guru. He made offense to his guru one time. And his guru said, oh, you're acting like hog. You better be hog. So he had to take birth, King Indra had to take birth as hog. And when he was the hog, the pig, he had his wife, he had his children. So a long time he was in the pig's life. Then after some time, Lord Brahma, he came, all right, your time for being the hog is over. You can come again to the king, to the heaven. And Indra said, no, how I can go? I have my wife here. I have my children. No, you are the king of heaven. Yeah, you're not the pig. But still, I have my wife. He was very attached. But after some time, the farmer came. He killed the children to eat them. Then he came. He killed the wife. Then he came for Indra with the axe. Then Indra came, oh, Brahma, come and get me again. So he was thinking in that, well, before I was, you know, I wanted so much again to be the king of heaven. I was hog, I became. But now I have got this Brahma-Bhuta platform, this Dibya-Gyan. I have Gyan, Vigyan, Dibya. I have all these things. Who? I don't want any more the king. This temporary. Temporary. So he became a great devotee. And this Indra, the end of his life, he went back home, back to God. Just by reading Bhagavad Gita. So if we do these things, chanting, God appears in this age through the chanting. This morning I was giving a lecture about by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Bhagavad Gita, by chanting. This is like a revolution in our lives. Tad bhag vishaga janathaga viplava judgment pratishlokam amritatyapi naman nirantar sanskritam sivanti gayanti gilanti sarvaha. Anyone who does these things, if he can do the whole life, oh, that's such a fortunate person. Very auspicious life. Very auspicious. Chanting and hearing Bhagavatam, hearing Bhagavad Gita, that our lives will change within our own hearts. This is like a revolution. Others, they want to do the revolution by so many other ways, by throwing the bombs or taking the machine gun and fighting. But we don't. We went this morning, I said, we throw the bombs of Hare Krishna mantra. And we go chanting, we go in the street chanting, this is our bomb. We don't want to throw the bomb. This is not revolution. This doesn't change things. Temporarily, that does something, maybe makes things worse. And it's a very sinful activity. So, but the chanting Hare Krishna, that is the transcendental activity that Krishna is realized. He is present in this age through the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So, here Sanjaya says, my opinion, he was speaking to Dhritarashtra, your sons will not be victorious. Krishna is there, Arjuna is there, God is there, devotee is there. So, if we have here Krishna in the name, we have Krishna in the deity, we're always chanting Hare Krishna, we are devotees, so we are assured, all these things, opulence, victory, extraordinary power, morality, all will be on our side, but we have to keep always doing. Don't be like the elephant. You know, the elephant likes to take the bath and then goes on the river bank and then throws the dirt all over it and rolls in the mud again. So we come, we chant Hare Krishna, then we again go and engage in materialistic activities. Always keep chanting, keep engaging in the spiritual activity. Of course, that is better than nothing. Come to the temple, chanting, and then whatever your activity. But the best is to always, you come to the temple at home, you're chanting, whatever you're doing. And this way, you'll always be in the transcendental position. All these things will just follow you as your servants. The devotee doesn't run after these things, but they are like the servants of the devotee. Whatever he needs, by God's mercy, he can get. Hare Krishna. Does anyone want to ask any question? Yes.
Maharaj, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says the devotees are non-violent, it's a civil quality, and indeed it's a popular notion that spiritual life makes one peaceful. And so how do we sort of rationalise the fact that there is so much violence then in the scriptures?
In what? In
the violence. Yeah. How do we, if we're practicing non-violence, how can we then rationalise the fact that there is so much violence in the Vedas or you know, other areas like the crucifixion of people? Or
well, as I explained, that the essence of the knowledge is non-violence, spirituality. But in the world, unfortunately, not everyone wants to follow the spiritual path. They're causing disturbance. We are for ahimsa, non-violence. But just like, for example, someone came, we're all listening here, we're sitting here listening Bhagavad Gita. Someone comes in, he's got a big stick, he wants to come and bash everyone. So what do? We are non-violent. Yes, do as you like. We want to bash her, him, smash everything. No. We will stop. We will try to talk him out of it. But if that fails, we have to maybe tackle him and subdue him. Sometimes that needs some physical pressure, exertion. But it may have to be a little violent with that person. So out of protection and out of duty, one is allowed. But not just in self-aggrandizement. Understand? There's a difference. Self-aggrandizement means that for your own gratification in the world, you're going to be violent. Whether you want to be gratified just mentally, intellectually, or physically, you're just, for no reason, you're going to be violent. Or for the reason that's just materialistic reason, because everyone has they say they have their reasons. But if it's just on the mundane platform, it is not allowed. So if you're going for self-anger, but if you're just like Kshatriya means a warrior, means to protect. So warriors were for protection. And sometimes, as a last resort for protection, you need to take physical action to restrain that person. So you have to understand the instructions of the Vedas instructions of Bhagavad Gita rightly. You have to learn how to discriminate. Oh, this is violence is depicted here, but what is? How do we understand that? In what context do we understand that? Not that the violence is there. This is advocating the violence, just like Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield. No one could say they're advocating the violence. Krishna is telling Arjuna fight. Right? Krishna is he is giving the transit, but he's telling Arjuna to fight. Therefore, he's advocating them. He's not advocating violence as such. This is necessary as the duty because of the different reasons, but underlying is the spirituality. So in the world, unfortunately, the world is the makeup of the world is like that. We have to transfer ourselves to the spiritual world, then we won't have to be concerned about those things. That is the goal. Once we are able to get the liberation from the world and situate ourselves on the spiritual platform, the spiritual realm, those considerations aren't there. But in the world, those considerations have to be there. Not only human beings, but the animal kingdom, all the species of life, there's so much violence there. The tiger, the lion, very violent. So there's a lot of violence around. How to live in the world, in the midst of that violence, you have to sometimes take protection. Sometimes you have to be violent yourself to protect. So that is allowable. But not more than that. Any other question? Hare Krishna, thank you very much.